Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
And it's a nice day, huh? Do you agree? Oh, I feel nice day, and I was hoping you feel same way. Lots of people. Pretty soon we need a bigger shine room. You better show your wallet. Or just don't bring your wallet at all. One way or the other. I'm making joke. Okay, today we are going to talk from the Heartfelt Advice book. And my first question is, do you have any request from Heartfelt Advice book from that particular teaching? Page 93, you don't even have to look at the book. this is a serious. Did you say 93?
Yes, sir.
Wow, page 93. I have to be careful what I'm asking. I may be asking a trouble myself. So cannot be too trouble because I always get trouble. So, I'm not worried about it. Cutting the bonds of delusion. Wow, somebody choose really good subject. Now, question is, how I can present it in a way which you understand clear crystal, and benefit you? That's the question here. Cutting the bonds of delusion. Basically, the highlight of this is basically destroy the completely our own ego. That is not easy subject because the society we in and all living beings have ego and they are cherishing their ego. And the subject is saying how we can eliminate ego or how we can get rid of ego or how we can experiencing egolessness. Tibetan Dharma term is called Dhammitokpa Shirap means the wisdom that is emerged from experiencing egolessness. One does not experiencing egolessness, then that wisdom doesn't exist at that time. So Dhammitokpa Shirap means the wisdom that you're experiencing because of your experiencing egolessness. So the Western culture, generally no difference of Western, Eastern, no differences. But particularly in a Western society, Western culture, we are train them and we are emphasize them that we have to protect our own ego. And if anybody threat you or anybody hurting your ego, you maximum you should defense yourself as much as you can. That's how we train them. And the training began when we are in training began when we are like few words come out from our mouth, like mama or dada. From that point, and slowly you train them, and the training stops when everything stops. That means the training stops when you can't train anymore because you're dying. You gotta go. You have to let it go, everything. No matter how tight you're holding, your hand kind of naturally opens up like this. It could be diamond, ruby, or precious. But the majority of people, they have piece of wood or piece of shell. That's all they have. But that's important for them. So I have to let it go. Because you cannot hold like this anymore. Your hand goes like this. It's not your choice, by the way. It's called Mother Nature. It's called departure. It's called separation from your near and dear ones. Or separation, your mind from your body. So anyway, we cherish our ego, and the subject is saying, get rid of your ego. It's in many ways, spiritual point of view, samsara point of view, contradicts each other. This is one of those contradictions, because the more you attach to samsara, the more it contradicts to you. If that makes sense. So anyway, let me highlight that Dhammitokpa Shirab means completely one is not experiencing egolessness. You see, also I want to mention here that there is called oneness. Oneness, united oneness, united into one. Oneness. Oneness is ultimate oneness. It's only available, only possible is when our ego is completely disappeared. When our ego disappeared, the day, the oneness, you, I, oneness, I, others, oneness, you experience. They are like coexist. In order to see the other, you have to turn around. If you can't turn around completely, you can't see the other side. So, keep that in mind while I'm reading, you meditatively listen. As practitioner of the sacred Dharma, beautiful. Sacred is not so sacred if you don't experience a sacred. Delicious is not so delicious unless you personally experience it is a real delicious. The Sambhadis, sentient beings, most disgust and not you don't want to taste. It's a Sambhadis, it's a list and a delicacy list. It's for their dessert. But I'm not going to take you that direction too much because it's very confusing. So practitioners of the sacred Dharma, the Dharma is a sacred, holy Dharma. It's so holy if you experiencing that level. It's not so holy if you have nothing to do with your experience. So practitioner of the sacred Dharma, we are required to learn to cut the bonds of our own afflicting emotions. Afflicting emotions are walls where you keep your ego. Your ego is inside the house, but you manage to build a lot of walls after walls. And those walls are represents here afflicting emotions, including attachment. Root of suffering, root of pain and suffering, strugglement, root of that is attachment. And if you do not have any attachment, you don't have any suffering at all. Because if you don't have any attachment, then you don't need anything, and why you worry about what? It goes like that. So, it says, we are required to learn to cut the bonds of our own afflicting emotions. Practitioners are required to reduce attachment. That means you can't really get rid of your ego right away, but the clinging on the ego, holding, become a little bit loose and not, let's say, those walls outside your ego, less and less as we become a good practitioner. If you don't become a good practitioner, then your practice is only, you think you're practicing, or we think we're practicing, but not much to do with the reality, because there is no benefit at all, because you couldn't figure out how, you could not figure out, we could not figure out how it works. Reduce our ego. Reduce our attachment. So that's the kind of talking here. Bonds of our own afflicting emotions. So become Buddhist practitioner, next 5, 10 years, 20 years, if you can reduce your anger, if you can reduce your attachment, and if you can reduce less complaining, and that is a major contribution from Dharma. And that is a major contribution from me to you. But if you don't hear, if you don't really ever to do it, there's not much contribution except little entertainment. That's all. So cutting through these afflicting emotions, including serving our attachment to and desire for the object of our six senses. But liberation comes only by digging up the very root of secular existence. The root of secular existence is again going back to root of ego. Root of ego. If the root of ego is gone, then one of the signs is somebody says, I love you. And somebody says, I hate you, I'm going to kill you. Either one of these messages does not affect on you. Either one of these words you hear, one is a very nice, positive way, one is a very negative way, it does not make you excitement. It does not make you any excitement. It does not make you anything. Then, perhaps you're under control of your ego. Or, root of ego is disappearing. So the root of ego disappears, then root of all enemy, not animals, any enemy, all enemies disappear because you don't have any enemy at that point. So keep that in mind. For liberation comes only by digging up the very root of sacred existence. We dig up these roots of samsara by ceasing all harmful, meaningless activities in order to cut the bounds of our klesha. Klesha is another word for afflicted emotion. Kleshas. Our kleshas, and stay on the right path towards Buddhahood. It measures how skillful practitioner we are, how many times we fall into sidetrack. If we never fall in a sidetrack or less fall into sidetrack, that means we are more strong practitioner. We fall many times in a sidetrack, but then we manage to put back on the line, then we are intermediate. But we always sidetrack and never on a path, that would be amateur or perhaps beginner Dharma practitioner. We can cut through the bounds of our own delusion by recognizing that when we develop the desire attachment for object of our senses. So this is a very specifically breakdown how the ego, how the desire attachment develops. When sensory, when we see something with our not so clear eye, but clear enough to see something. Clear enough to see something. So how we interpret it and how we develop attachment right that moment, everything done. For example, yid yuan, yid myon means something they call attractive, if I'm using the right word, attractive. Is that a word there, attractive? Attractive means like drawn to something, drawn to. That's where your beginning attachment is starting. Or something you begin to irritate you, and chances are you get angry, even though you're not saying anything, but you can get angry without saying anything. And that is the symptom, that is the sign of your ego, your attachment, how developing, using senses are. What you see, what you hear, what you taste, what you think. That's how you begin to develop that. So what here is saying, you have to catch them, you have to recognize them the moment of rising and ceasing of the desire attachment related to the ego. So we are fooled into chasing an illusion. That's a beautiful. Unenlightened means chasing in a delusion entire their life. It was not happened one time. It was a happen entire their life. Even in a dream state, we are chasing after. Your body may be resting, not necessarily your mind is resting. So, practitioners, if they can control their ego, if they can control their attachment, desire attachment, then if they can control daytime, then it reflects on a dream, also they can control gradually, slowly. But it has to be step by step and a development, like a progression. Is the word progression? Progression. So, it says, we can cut through the bounds of our own delusion by recognizing that when we develop the desire attachment for object of our senses, we are fooled into chasing in illusion that only keeps us trapped in a cyclic existence. We must cut the bounds of our klesha, or conflicting emotions, by letting go of our attachment to our own ego. The more we practice, the less we will have ego. The less we have ego, the less we have problem. You don't have to work on whole world ego and problems. You only need to work on your own ego. Working towards your own ego is so powerful, so efficient, so good, so strong, that you are working rest of the world. You feel like you're working on the rest of the world. Because if you control your ego and that desire attachment, rest of the world also contribute your gentleness and egolessness. They can benefit because there is no attachment, there is no ego involved with it. So they're saying, just good as you can't really cover completely earth by leather, because earth is so big. So if you cover with your feet with leather shoes, then no matter where you walk, you're always using leather. That analysis is working with your own ego versus a try to talking about everybody else's ego. So, we must cut the bounds of our kleshas by letting go of our attachment to our own ego, embodied by our desire for name, fame. Name and fame, unenlightened beings in society need that. Recognition, feedback, praise. You need a name, fame, and respect. All of those you're looking for in unenlightened being society. But in a Dharma, religious, spiritual realm, R-E-A-L-M, spiritual realm, name, fame, and respect are the major problem. You don't want them, those. You want to get away from, you're running away from those. All part of the worldly dharma, worldly matters, mundane matters, worldly dharma of mundane existence. It is the contradicts with the spirituality, contradicts with your dharma, reality. We must cut through our deluded notion of friends. Of course, you can't cut your friends because most of you need a friend and you don't have a friend. Maybe I'm overstated here that you don't have to worry. You can sell lama. You don't have to worry. I'm this much age and I don't have any friend. To cut the friend, you don't have to worry, Lama, I don't have any good friend. The friend I have is they take advantage of me. Only when they need something, they will approach. Not when I want something, they will approach. So that's called friend is a relationship. It's also a two-way street in many ways. But you know more than I do because you deal with that more. I have to friend with all sentient beings, so my mind is really busy with everybody rather than a one, two, three kind of thing. So, we must cut through our deluded notion of friends. I think best way to keep friends is don't expect much in the time. And then your friendship will last much longer. But also, if it doesn't last that long, so it is just like anything else, that it goes and comes kind of thing. It goes and comes, but it does not hurt you. It doesn't affect on you. And it says that the friend and enemy, you must cut through our deluded notion of friends and enemy. Today's enemy, next year, maybe that's your best friend. Today's your best friend. Next year, this time, they're suing each other in a courtroom. They're looking at each other, and the judges are looking at each other, and there's a problem. And sometimes they take court, it's a few hundred dollars worth. I often think that it will be much cost, much more than that. To take that in court. But I let them decide. So, we must cut through our deluded notion of friends and enemies. If you don't have any enemy, you are blessed. If you have all living beings equally, they are your friends, then that's even more blessing. Because you don't have to discriminating friend and enemy. You feel all my friend. Bodhisattva point of view, you have to love them all. And your level of your love, sometimes you don't like them. You don't like them, everybody. But then you have to love them all, and then it is slowly you also like them. Because if heaven is, you have to love them because Buddha's teaching, Dharma. But you don't like them, majority people. You like them only certain people. And you need to work on that, and now you have to like them all too. In order to improve, you have to love them, you have to like them. If you don't like them, don't love them, you have a big problem. We know that. So, in fact, if you hate them and you don't like them, then you have a sort of lot of enemies. That you have so many enemies because you always hate others. You have so many enemies that everywhere you go, you're scared because they may have a few extra guns in their wallet, in a glove compartment or somewhere. And if you look at what do you get, they get, you want this? So, better not look at directly anywhere now. They're confused. And we are confused. So for those, the designations are dualistic and completely conditional. They are merely dependently arising phenomena. So let me read back. We must cut through our delusion notion of friends and enemy. For those, these designations are dualistic and completely conditional. They are merely dependently arising phenomena. Friends and enemy both are temporary. And when you develop attachment, other you develop anger and hate. Both bring you a problem, negative afflicting emotions. Therefore, can you bring in between? Well, in between will be impartiality or equanimity or divine work of Tanyula Neighbor George. Tanyum, equanimity. If you can bring in equanimity, you don't hate anybody, you don't love with a conditional either. So you sort of like unconditionally leave them in between. Mental reflect, it says, merely dependent on the rising phenomena, mental affliction of our own negative emotions. We experience our own negative emotions and then we blame everybody else. Instead, we must follow the path of Bodhisattva. Path of the Bodhisattva, what you do? You embrace everybody. You embrace. Embrace the idea of equanimity. Or it did mention here, must be our same writer. Equanimity or unconditional love must be the same writer. Unconditional love and compassion towards all sentient beings. So if you love someone too much, you have to remember, what about all sentient beings? If you hate somebody too much, you need to ask, what about all sentient beings? So when we cut through the bounds of our afflicting emotions, we begin to dig up the very root of our delusions. The cause of all pain and suffering in a samsaric existence is no other than a delusion. And a delusion, we experiencing desire attachment. And in order to attain the bliss of realization of ultimate view, the cloud of the delusion must settle down, must go away. Then one will attain the blissful or bliss of realization of ultimate view. The ultimate view is almost like sticking our head out of the thick cloud on earth, and our head comes out of above the cloud, able to see the rest of the space. Only problem is down there, cloud. Like that. This analysis is easy to remember. How can you get out from delusion? So, once again, when we cut through the bounds of our afflicting emotions, we begin to dig up the very root of our delusions, the cause of all pain and suffering in a samsaric existence. Samsaric means this realm, R-E-A-L-M, realm, where we are now. In this realm, there's a lot of problems. And if you look at the TV, turn on and off, you will see a lot of problems most of the time. If you talk, listen to radio, a lot of problems. If you talk to your near and dear ones on the telephone or Facebook, something, majority, there's a lot of complaint, a lot of problems going on. That's a sign and sign of there is a lot of struggling. There's a lot of problems. Now, that is a very negative way of talking, but we don't have to be a negative. We can enjoy all of those, but not suffering, not attached to it. See? Not suffering. You're not experiencing suffering. You're enjoying. You're embracing. Just like Bodhisattva did. And we can do that. Only one condition. You have to be good practitioners. So, good practitioner, nobody can make you a good practitioner. You really need to be smart enough to become good practitioner, whatever it takes. You need to get the angle to approach, to become a good student. You have to figure out. Yeah. So that's the page 93. And we're going to meditate here, hoping that from today, rest of your life, you work on your ego. Hope you work on your desire attachment, reduce. And visualize that you can get out of samsara delusion, just like a brick through the cloud, and you are outside the cloud. Everything so clear, crystal, you can see it. But down there, lots of foggy. Like cloud, can't see where we are landing the airplane. Okay, so we have a little time. I will take one, two questions. If somebody have a question this morning, talk. This time you raise your hand, and if the first comes, first serve. First come, first serve. Why are you laughing? First come, first serve means if there's 10 people raise hand, I'm going to take only first, one, two, three kind of thing. Okay. Any question? Oh, okay. Yes.
What's the quickest, most immediate antidote when you catch yourself really being angry with somebody? Or irritated, or you just don't like them.
Just go very close to their face and go like this. No, several ways. Number one, if you get angry, probably isolate yourself. Means go away, go other room or go other place or go away from that area, and then first they say exhale, inhale few times, exhale, inhale, and then after you exhale, inhale few times, and then there are many solutions. Okay, but some of them I can remember now, so I can just tell what I remember. One of them is look into the anger itself, see what the anger is mad at. Where you are looking into the angers, what's the mad out of, means what the ingredients, what's inside there, you look at that, you're already meditating because it's analytical meditation, and you may not find a good reason. When you can't find a good reason, then your anger is the English word flatted, like
deflated.
That's a good thing. Number one. But if you think you find something, and you need to concentrate on that, what you find, again, in the meantime, the anger brought you mindfulness or meditation. And another solution is, in the history of spiritual or Buddhism, there is no good reputation on when we exercise anger. There is no good feedback by using anger. There is always anger brings other people anger. And if you destroy out of anger, they will destroy you back. So it will... You can't get out of free from anger because it will go back and forth. It's like maybe some countries we call enemy. So we kill each other thousands and thousands. Their children of children will resentment and hate continue each other. And they call one country is a winner, one country is a loser, right? In a spiritual point of view, nobody wins. As long as they're using a negative emotions, nobody wins. Both lose. Nobody wins. But in a mundane world, they will say, no, no, you, we don't follow the spiritual thing. We follow history. We want to win. We want to destroy the other country. And we capture them. We destroy them. Then they say they win. Really, you're chopping and killing part of your own body. Because the others are a part of you too. The ones we destroy is a part of several reasons. We are connected with the earth, water, air, elements, everything we share. So we destroy the other side, it affects on the other side. And we are all stuck on the one planet, home. Home. Home is earth. We all live in a one home. Then we destroy each other by saying, this is my territory, this is your territory. Territory means they are destroying each other. But the fact is we destroy our head part, destroy the feet part, destroy the air or different part like that. This is just like that. Nobody wins. Both lose. But they don't know that. This is only Dharma point of view. Okay, next person.
If you're trying to reduce ego or trying to let go of attachment and desire, but it's going really slow, is there a mantra or devotion that you can ask for some help?
I would say if you are moving slow, you are one of the lucky ones. Because majority is not moving so much. But that's my answer for you. You know, this question happened with the Dalai Lama or some very popular teacher. And the similar question, not exact question, but similar question asked Dalai Lama. He answered, he says, each lifetime, if you step forward, even few steps, your destination is New York. But you have to, your own feet, you have to walk, even few steps each lifetime, it's still better than nothing. Better than nothing, that's what they say, because a little improvement each lifetime, it's all about Buddha Dharma. Why we try to do something, since we are all busy, why we add a Dharma practice in our life, is attention, the goal is we want to improve, even if it's not major proof, little improvement each lifetime. And that was the reason why the monks and nuns, they lose their hair and wearing a different clothes and not eating two, three meals, only one meal a day. Why they're sacrificing? Their intention is, I want to go a few steps this lifetime a little better. That was the reason they sacrificed and control their desire attachment. It's not like they don't have a desire attachment. So, to prevent that, Buddha said, you can't become a nun and a monk if you are not functioning like real monk and nun. That manhood or woman, how you say. If you're not functioning, what regular man, woman, functionality, you have to have that. Otherwise, you're not qualified to become monk and nun. So there is a question, is that are you a man or are you a woman? Or are you a man? If it's a man, it looks like a man, but it's a woman, you say, are you a man or a woman? It says, I'm a woman. Are you functionality like a woman? Which they're asking specifically, if you don't have any desire, you don't have any woman thing, then you don't qualify. That was the reason, according to Buddhist texts, the Buddha had to play around with those 30 or 100 queens, princes, so that they had to, a little bit of that had to do with a few years, I don't know, you know, the luxurious thing, the pleasures in a palace. So the musicians playing music, queen and bodyguards, police, outside, everything. So all this royally, they set up, he had to marry it. If he become married, if he says, when I was a teenager, I become monk, and there's the question might say, are you really man? how you become monk, we don't know your functionality. So the Buddha had to have a baby, Rahula, and then they know that he is capable to take care of the kingdom, he's capable to be husband, he's capable to be a what everybody else can do. Then his qualification, when he become monk, then we go, wow, you renounce everything, detach everything. You're in the middle of the palace, you instantly underneath the tree, homeless. Wow. And he say, I cannot enjoy myself with the pleasures in the human realm. I cannot enjoy without finding some solution how we can overcome the suffering, the old age, sickness and death that we have to deal with. I can't sleep well thinking about those. I have to find a solution for once and for all for the mankind. That was the reason he renounced everything. You know that, right? Read the story. Okay, that's all. It's important you need to talk to me. I'll take only that's last. Okay.
Well, this is a little variation of the question, but okay, as an example of, you know, slowness.
Oh.
What is the back? Sometimes I experience kind of a back and forth. That, you know,
back and forth.
In other words, I let go of, you know, attachments and then, you know, feeling, you know, impartiality.
Yeah.
A month later, two weeks later, then it comes back again.
Okay.
How would you suggest working with that type of experience?
Yeah, that's a really true statement, and that's good. That's good. Majority people, practitioner, I think this book has some chapter like that, if you read, and some of you can remind me. We make few steps forward, we make few steps backward. And then we step 10 steps forward, and then we 20 steps backward. And that chapter is a guarantee inside this text somewhere. And anyway, that's a true statement, and that is the reason that the daily practice is required. It's because of that. Consistency. Daily, and the daily practice is become part of life, then you don't have any worry and concern of that, because you're doing every day, it's a part of what you do every day. So practice become a part of a daily schedule where no effort needed to do. No effort, it's just spontaneously is a routine, and that will give you less backward too much, and more stable and a little forward, and then more stable and a little forward. I think it's the property appreciation and depreciation. Majority, they appreciate a little bit. Sometimes they depreciate, but the most time they appreciate little by little each year. And then by the time 10 years, 20 years later, you realize your property is worth much more than what you pay for it. Does that make sense? Same with your accumulation of Dharma practice is back and forth a lot, but if you don't lose too much of depreciate, then it's always a little bit appreciated forward. That analysis go well. Thank you very much, everybody. Sarva Mangalam.
Sarva Mangalam.
Sarva Mangalam.
Sarva Mangalam.
Sarva Mangalam.